Welcome to the Fearlessly Authentic Sash and Soul Podcast, the show that goes beyond the stage, prioritizing a healthy mindset, overall well-being, and triumphs in the pageant journey. In each episode, we dive into the transformative power of embracing authenticity fearlessly.
From mindset mastery and self-care strategies to success stories that inspire, this podcast is your go-to guide for navigating the pageant world with confidence and resilience. Join us as we embark on a journey of self-discovery, empowerment, and celebrate the stories of those who fearlessly embraced their authenticity on the path to pageant success. I'm Lila Sherry.
And I'm Rayanna Johnson. Welcome to Sash and Soul.
Hey guys, we're back.
It's a snow day today. How many inches of snow do you have? I think there's like 4 outside of my window.
I think we have 6, but I'm in Milwaukee. We had that band of like everywhere around us, above and below us, we're getting like the 4 to 6. And then we were at like the 7 to 9 inch.
Yuck.
Oh yeah. I got out of bed this morning, knew it was happening. My sweet husband brought me coffee. He's done that for the last couple of days. Cause I've just been having, I've just been having like a down week, and pulled the curtains back and I just started yelling like in the most dramatic way. You guys, the first day of spring was on Tuesday. Like, what are we doing?
The snow, I have a love-hate relationship with the snow. There's a sense of calmness, but it also makes me want to stay in bed all day and not leave my apartment. And I need to go to Miss Beloit today. So, speaking of staying in your bed all day, snow, winter, and the seasons changing. One of the biggest things that changes for me is my mental health throughout the year in relation to the seasons, being in Wisconsin. And that's our topic for today, is not just mental health, but the difference between mental health and mindset, and how much we talk about mindset and how much mindset is such a big role in pageantry, but how much mindset is not mental health.
We talked about this yesterday, just in one of our chats, about someone had asked you, like, what was the biggest lesson that you've learned in all of your years competing? And we both sat for like, it felt like 10 minutes in silence, just like, what the biggest, like just one lesson? Like that's a thing. Well, I think one of the lessons that I'm coming to recognize just in our little chat before we started recording was really understanding the significant difference here between mental health and mindset work. That was something that actually was harmful to me when I was competing, was not recognizing the difference between those two things. And it's one of the driving factors behind what I do now as a mindset coach. So I'm really, really excited to dive into this topic today. And I'm really hopeful that if you need to hear it, that the words come through to you very clearly and you just get like a sense of comfort and peace and understanding and hope. And I want you to do what's best for you always. Like that is, I'm going to get emotional here already. We haven't even started talking about it yet. But that's truly what I want, because I remember how painful it was for me. And that's my mission. I don't want anybody else to experience that pain, or at least if they are experiencing that pain, to not go through it alone and to recognize how beautiful it is on the other side.
So let's start with mindset. What is mindset? What is mindset work? I think that it can sound really arbitrary and not tangible to a lot of people. What do we mean when we say we work on mindset for a majority of competition prep, but also life, just life success in general?
Right. I think when you're thinking about mindset, think more short term, think more in the moment. Mindset work that we do is working on overcoming comparison, working on letting go of fear of what other people think of us, fear of failure, fear of success, really those like in the moment anxieties that are just patterns in thinking when it comes to like what your goals and aspirations are, overcoming perceived failure or weaknesses or setbacks that you've experienced. And I always say perceived failure, because failure is really, everybody has their own definition of what a failure looks like. So I say perceived failure when you think you've failed at something. patterns in, you know, how you feel about yourself and your confidence in terms of reaching your goals and your desires. And of course, perfectionism, which I feel is all encompassing when it comes to mindset work and us beautiful type A personalities out there that are just striving to change the world and want to succeed in all of our endeavors, but specifically for Sash and Soul pageant.
I think perfectionism is a big one just for a lot of women in general and a lot of women who want to be high achievers or even ones who, like you said, are afraid of success. A lot of that might stem from perfectionism. So anyways, well, let's pause on that. Now, what is mental health? What is it in mindset that we don't work on that falls under mental health?
Mental health is the long term. Mental health is mental illness is going to affect your mental health long term. Trauma is going to affect your mental health long term. So we've got all of the illnesses and disorders, many that you've heard of, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, eating disorders. There are mood disorders, emotional dysregulation disorders. These are going to affect your daily activity, your daily living, and how you experience your life on a day-to-day basis. These can also affect your physical health and well-being. And mental illness, mental health needs to be treated with therapy and prescribed medication, and really daily self-care and knowing what you need to do to take care of yourself on a regular basis. There are things for me, I know that I have to maintain a certain schedule for myself and get a certain amount of rest and eat proper foods. That's one of the reasons that I haven't been doing well this last week is because I have just not been eating the way that my body needs me to fuel myself to be at my best performance. So a lot of these different factors are going to affect my overall mental health and well-being that isn't just a matter of the way I'm thinking, which is mindset. It can be. There's so much that I'm talking about in therapy of thought patterns and the way that, you know, my brain, the habits of thought in my brain when it comes to, you know, trauma that I've experienced or communication with loved ones. Like it's very deep. Like I don't know how to go into depth about it, but it's different than what we do in mindset work when we're talking about the perfectionism piece. Can be closely tied. And that's really what I want to get to the bottom of in this episode.
Right. And that was my next point too, is I was going to emphasize how the two are so closely intertwined. It's almost like your baseline is your mental health, your well-being, your foundation is mental health. And the mindset work helps to sustain what you work on when it comes to your mental health. The mindset work is like you're sprinkling some sprinkles on top, or you're adding or you're continuing what you've worked on when it comes to mental health. But if the foundation is not there, the mindset work doesn't do anything. It can't fix, it can't build, it just sustains. I think that's the best way that I can describe it, is that mental health is the foundation, and that should be number one priority when it comes to your brain. But then mindset is what sustains the work that you do on your mental health. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think this is a really great time. We're going to dive into this later, but this is a great time to mention that mindset work is not just positive thinking. It's not just having the best attitude ever. And there's no perfect in mindset work. So I want to throw that caveat out there in also understanding that your baseline, your mental health is going to affect your ability to use really solid mindset skills in certain moments. There is no perfection. We have to give ourselves grace and we have to validate where we're at. And I'm really glad that you brought up baseline, actually, because go figure. I had a therapy session yesterday and I learned things. So I'm going to share. My therapist, Maria, she's amazing. I love her so much. She's like a teacher for me as well. But she said, because I was telling her, I've just been really low this week. I'm struggling with some imposter syndrome, some perfectionism, just feeling not good enough. some of these things. And she's like, well, it sounds like your baseline is lower than usual. And I said, can you help me understand what baseline means? And she said, well, your baseline is kind of where you're at when you wake up. It's kind of how you're generally feeling most of the time. You can differentiate, like, think of baseline as the climate and weather is like the mood shifts up and down. That makes sense. So your climate can change, but it's more of that long-term, like that baseline is the climate of where you're at. And I recognize this. Sometimes my baseline is much better and I'm feeling more consistently upbeat. And then sometimes, like this week, my baseline is lower where I'm just sluggish and I need a lot more hugs and snuggles from my husband because I'm just feeling down. And he recognizes when I'm in those moods too. So it's helpful to have someone that's a support system like that and that can understand. But when your baseline is lower, when something triggers you, then you go even further down than you would if your baseline is higher and you're feeling more upbeat and feeling better about the world in general and something triggers you. You don't go as far down. So that's why your baseline is kind of important to navigate where you're at so that you can figure out, like, what do I need to be doing for myself right now with the baseline that I'm at? For me this week, with my baseline being lower, I needed to do a lot more self-care. I needed to do a lot more intentional breaks in between my coaching calls. I needed to do a lot more intentional rest at night. And this is where I didn't do well this week. And I'm trying not to judge myself. I'm just trying to like move forward from here. I didn't do well at fueling my body and taking care of my body through the foods that I was eating and what I was drinking. That was really affecting where my baseline was at. So it's really a matter of just recognizing and understanding where you're at and not judging it.
What has been your, I almost said biggest takeaway, and we just talked about how that question was such a loaded question. But I want to ask you, I guess, what do you say to somebody who is trying to find the difference between the two and can't figure out where it falls or where they should go or what they should do? They don't have mindset help. They don't have mental health help. They're kind of trying to figure it out on their own. What would you say, or what is your advice, or where do you start?
If you're questioning it, that's a clue. If you're questioning whether you just need mindset work or you need therapy or you need both, that's a clue. I will say time and time again, therapy is always better. Always better. If you can do both at the same time, great. I have seen some incredible life changes in clients when they are actively pursuing both and working with their therapist, finding a therapist that they connect with that's actually helping them learn skills and tools that they need to do on an everyday basis and gain a better understanding, not necessarily of the why they're experiencing it, because there's only so much you can do in the why, but the how can I manage this moving forward? How can I get to a better space of health? How can I recover, essentially? Right? Like, there we go. Mental health is, there's some level of recovery in that. And it's going to ebb and flow. And sometimes you're going to have those setbacks. And then, okay, but it doesn't mean, you know, that you've fallen way back. That's something that my therapist reminded me of yesterday. She said, I know it's scary to have setbacks like this week when your baseline is lower, but that doesn't mean that you've lost all of the progress that you've made. And that was really encouraging for me. And that's the kind of thing that therapists can do, is they're seeing your progress from a trained perspective on mental health and well-being and brain health. And they can see your patterns and help you navigate those. That's very different from what a mindset coach can do. And I will say it over and over again to my clients, I am not a licensed mental health professional. I am a mindset coach. I see a licensed mental health professional. I also see a psychiatrist regularly for my prescribed medications. I do these things for myself. And I practice the mindset work that I do with you, because I don't believe in being a hypocrite. I want to practice what I preach, and I want to use what's working for me and help implement that into your life as well. So when someone is trying to navigate where they're at and what they need, that's the first clue, is I would always say, absolutely check into therapy. It truly, I know it's a scary thing. It's a stigmatized thing. I've been there. I've experienced that. But therapy is useful no matter what you've experienced. Even if you feel like you grew up in a beautiful home with great parents and you really didn't struggle with much, therapy is still beneficial. And there's no, to me, there is no shame in it. To me, there is beauty and success in reaching out for that kind of help. To me, that's just self-development. How in the world are you going to grow and excel without someone else supporting you along the way? We go to school so that we can learn things that we didn't know before. We don't kick ourselves because we had to, you know, go through high school and get this degree because we didn't know these things before. So why would we do that about the understanding of our mental health and our brain functionality? Not kick ourselves for wanting to learn more. You know, we received some feedback recently that I absolutely loved from someone that they really like our podcast because we talk so much from the coaching perspective, but from emotional intelligence, really talking about emotional intelligence. And that's what therapy will help you achieve, is a higher level of emotional intelligence and understanding of who you are, where you're at, why you function the way you do, and how to elevate yourself.
The best teachers, the best mentors, the most successful people, the best coaches have their own teachers and had their own mentors that got them to a place. You can take anybody that has seemingly any sort of success in this world and ask them, how did you get here? Chances are they're probably going to mention mentors, coaches, people who helped them along the way, the GPS, and they drove the car. And so to me, that is why it's silly to even say shameful, although so many of us feel that. But sometimes your therapists have therapists. They have coaches, and then their coaches, and then their coaches. It's all one big line of passing down information that helped one person at one time and will hopefully help another person before they have to get to that time where they learn that lesson on their own. It's more difficult or more stressful. So I wanted to bring that up because I saw a post the other day too of how would you expect your coach or your mentor, your teacher to be so amazing without their own mentors and without their own teachers? It's all one big cycle.
So shame is one reason why somebody would maybe not reach out for support, but there's another reason, and that's fear. Fear of what you will uncover, fear of having to face some of your own trauma, your bad experiences, and fear in that, like, maybe you're not ready. That's the other aspect, like maybe you're just not ready to do that. I guess I would again ask, why aren't you ready? Is it fear? Is it fear that's causing you to feel like you're not ready? And one thing that I say to a lot of clients when we're talking about therapy and what that looks like is you actually have a lot more control in your therapy session than you think. Your therapist isn't like berating you with questions about your trauma. They're trained in going easy about those things. They're trained in recognizing, you know, the steps that you need to take to get there. And your sessions are not like, I think we have this idea that therapy is just like sobbing the entire time on a couch with a whole bunch of Kleenex in front of you. And it's not. I mean, yesterday in my therapy session, I think we were laughing half the time because we were talking about stuff that was like just eye-opening and helpful for me to understand. And that's the relationship that I have with my therapist. I have clients who have gone through significant trauma therapy, and that is painful. But they also talk to me about how their therapist would say, like, we're not ready. We're not there yet. We're getting there. You'll have a better idea of when you're there, and that's okay. But the point is to start taking those steps. And the other thing that I say is, I think we have this idea that it's going to take a really long time to work through all of this yuck. But what I experienced was that I actually started feeling better a lot faster than I thought I was going to. Part of that was because I chose to face it. But another part was because I had a great therapist. Another part was because I'd been through a lot of bad therapists in the past. And so I have advice on that as well. But yeah, so there's the shame piece of it. And then there's the fear piece of it. And if you can look those dead in the eye and try and recognize them and overcome them, reach out to somebody that can support you. Reach out to somebody that's in therapy who can better help you understand what actually being in therapy is like. Reach out to somebody that can help you navigate how to find a therapist, because, oh, that is one of the most daunting things when I'm just like, I don't have it in me to start looking for a therapist. There have been times in my life that I put off finding a therapist for so long because I was like, oh, this just sounds exhausting. Well, that was a clue in hindsight. Like, my depression was just that bad that I like couldn't even think about doing a general search. It's daunting. I know that. And I don't want to say anything on here to make you think that I just think it's so easy to find therapy. I know it's not. I know that it's difficult. But I also know how powerful and amazing it is.
I'm taking a step back in this conversation because I feel like a lot of this is speaking to me in a way as well. I mean, I'm in the throes of what it feels like mentally to be a title holder, to be Miss Wisconsin. And then we're kind of coming out of the back end of it. We have a couple months left, and I know that there's going to be some things that I'll have to deal with on the other end of being a title holder. And so what was your journey like throughout competition, but also I want to emphasize what it was like after competition, because I've heard countless stories of women who excelled in pageantry and left the pageant world and kind of realized that there was a lot of things that they never dealt with or things that came up unexpectedly, or they just weren't sure how to go about it. Because let's be honest, pageants is kind of a niche world. It's a small world. It's big, but it's small, right? And so it's not like you turn to your friend wherever and they're going to understand your life in pageantry unless they happen to be a pageant friend, right? But what are some of the moments that you remember after your time, after Miss Wisconsin was over, after pageant life was over?
I'm really glad you asked this question, because in our conversations recently, you've said to me so many times, thank you for saying that. Thank you for sharing that with me, because it can be very lonely. So after Miss America was done, we're going from that point, I really struggled with regret. Talked about that a little bit before on Sash and Soul, that I really felt like I choked at Miss America. Now I understand so much more of why that happened to me, that it wasn't a matter of me just failing at mindset or failing at preparation. It was a deeper mental health struggle that I really just wasn't facing. And I wish I had, because I think my whole experience would have been better. But there was a lot of regret, resentment after Miss America. That was really hard to talk about with people, because those that had never been to Miss America, even those that were in pageants but had never been to Miss America, or those that were volunteers and that were supportive of me, would say, but you went to Miss America. Like, be grateful for that. Yes, I did. And I am grateful for that. And I'm still struggling because it's done. And I worked for years to get there. And it wasn't the experience that I had hoped and prepared for it to be. And I can never go back and do it again. You guys, I still have dreams about competing. I had a dream last night. I had a dream last night that I was competing for Miss Wisconsin.
Wow.
So I'm sorry to tell you, Lila, and everybody else out there.
It doesn't end. Later, no, it doesn't end.
No, it doesn't end. And then to be, you know, still Miss Wisconsin for the last 6 months. Miss America was in September. So I won Miss Wisconsin in June, competed in September. It was a very quick turnaround. And then I had 9 more months of being Miss Wisconsin. And it took a little bit of time for me to dive back into enjoying appearances and enjoying being Miss Wisconsin, because so often when I was going places, you just got back from Miss America. How did you do?
Mm-hmm.
Oof, that question, you guys. How did you do? Well, I didn't place, but I had a great time. And one of my best friends was first runner up. Like, it was just a lot of that dialogue so yep. much. And until that faded away, then I was finally able to be like, okay, now I can kind of start enjoying going to appearances again. But even that, my struggle of, you know, maybe not having appearances, it was slower around the holidays into January, February. I mean, I think there was 1 month that I only had $100 that month that I had made. And like, how do you make ends meet with $100? Back then, you know, Miss Wisconsin was my full-time job. It was expected that that's what I did full-time. Totally understandable. But we were also in like a weird shift in change in the organization. So we didn't have as many of those appearances lined up. So then there was a lot of pressure that I was putting on myself of not doing enough, not being enough. And now I look back and I'm like, wow, that was not so much mindset stuff as it was depression and anxiety related. And anyway, I got to a point where you're at right now, where I was freaking out about what I was going to do after my year was over. Had no idea. Like, I had graduated college, then I won Miss America. Or geez, that would have been nice. I had graduated college and then I won Miss Wisconsin. And I hadn't held a job and I hadn't really applied for any other jobs. And I had a very general major. I graduated as a organizational communication studies major and women and gender studies major. So I just really didn't know which direction I wanted to go. I thought maybe nonprofit development, but I didn't feel like I had the skills. Looking back now, I'm like, oh my gosh, I learned so much in Wisconsin. It all helped me so much in my career. But I was afraid. I was afraid. And that fear only fueled my depression and anxiety. And it was definitely a struggle. And then there was also the sense of, okay, I was Miss Wisconsin, now what? And the fear of, I don't want this to be a peak in my life. And being a has-been and feeling like what I'm doing isn't as fun or as valuable, or, you know, I worked so hard to become Miss Wisconsin so I could make a difference throughout the state. And I was doing that and I was speaking to students and having just the most incredible, powerful moments of vulnerability and connection. And then what comes next?
I think the biggest lie we were ever told as pageant women is that 1 year should be the time that you're advocating or making a difference or being in your community. 1 year is a very short amount of time. 1 year is so small when it comes to sustainability. For me, I mean, the biggest lesson I've learned is, yes, I love being Miss Wisconsin. I have been able to be in a lot of really incredible spaces with really awesome people that I wouldn't have been in if I wasn't Miss Wisconsin. But it is a lie to say that this year was my quote unquote advocacy year, or the real work is done in years and years of sustained work constantly. And so this idea that my year's going to be over and then what is so weird to me. And yeah, in case anybody needs to hear this, I am sitting in a really weird space. And every time somebody asks me, how do you feel about your year being over soon? Or what are you going to do? What are your plans when your year is over? I don't know. Actually, I was at my last Quick Trip appearance. And you see the CEO and you meet his family throughout your year and you start to get kind of close. You update them on how many miles you've done and where you've been, right? Every time you go to one of these openings. And his wife comes up and just asks, well, what are your plans for next year or for when your year is done? And I looked at her and I said, you know what, Jill? I don't know. I have no idea. And she just pauses and she goes, well, are you okay with that? And I was like, yeah, actually, right now I am okay with that. I don't have any other answer for you. She was like, well, then that's all that matters. Like, I wish you all the best. And that was really eye-opening for me. I hold on to that conversation a lot. It was really eye-opening for me, for somebody who has a lot of wisdom on me and was able to stay calm when my response was, I have no idea. And that was really comforting to me. So,
Before we move on, I also want to say that part of my struggle was that I didn't feel enough. I didn't feel like I was enough. I didn't feel like I had done enough. And I didn't feel powerful enough in my own right to do something really cool next. And what was actually perpetuating that fear in me was seeing my Miss America class and so many of my classmates going on to do really cool things from what I thought on social media. And my perception of it was they have it all together. Like, they know what they're doing. They obviously feel good about themselves. They have all the right support, all this stuff. And it was perpetuating me feeling really small. That was really difficult. And I don't think that we say it all the time when it is being talked about. We're like, that's not talked about enough. And I would imagine now, looking back, like, I don't think any of them really felt 100% awesome and confident and comfortable doing what they were doing either. We're all just human beings going through it. I think there's different levels because we're all at, hey, different baselines, right? And at that time for me, my baseline was really low. So any kind of dig was a pretty small dig, and any kind of win didn't feel as great as it could have if my base was higher. And so we can't really judge where people are at and what their baseline is and what their perception is of their success and failure either. I think that's really important. But here I am, made it through 10 years later. And I'm not going to lie, I went through a whole mess of yuck. A whole mess of yuck. And so much of it was a mental health journey for me.
What do you have to say 10 years later?
There's a part of me that wants to say, I wish I had figured it out sooner. There's a part of me, a very small part, that wishes. I look back at friendships that were lost, relationships that were broken, pain, career opportunities that were missed, because now I know that I do struggle with a pretty high functioning mood disorder. It's high functioning, but it's still a mood disorder. And now I see, and I look back and how much that actually affected my behavior and then the outcomes of the work that I was trying to do with the weight, my relationships with other people. And like, there's just a lot of pain with that. And it wasn't until a couple of years ago that I finally outright asked my therapist, like, do I have borderline personality disorder, which is a mood disorder? I struggle with emotional regulation. And she's like, you know, we're in the mental health field, we're really trying to fight that term because they're so stigmatized and so broad. It can mean so many different things. There's a whole wide spectrum of where people can be at with this particular mood disorder. And she said, I have been treating you with, you know, dialectical behavioral therapy, which is the therapy used to treat borderline personality disorder. But I don't want to add more stigma to what you're going through. You're very high functioning. But if you're asking me outright, yes, yes, I do think you have borderline personality disorder. And it was like a gut punch, but then also like moments later, like this instant relief of like, oh, well, now I can do something. Now I can focus and understand. I'm like, when I get really dysregulated emotionally and I go from like super rational, wise mind, Rihanna, to I feel like a crazy person, Rihanna, I can understand that that's what that is. And now I can use tools to help myself overcome it. And the fact that I am publicly talking about having this is outrageous to me, that I went from being diagnosed with this and this understanding now that this is the reason that I have struggled with self-harm, with suicide ideation, with like all of these relationship issues in the past, like the shame of that. Now, 2 years later, you know, having had a conversation with my therapist yesterday and her reassuring me how much I have grown and her telling me, I have seen you grow so much. And even though you're in a slump right now, you're still light years beyond where you were a couple of years ago. So, and now I can say it on a podcast episode to a whole bunch of strangers that are listening, strangers, but friends, we appreciate you guys. But still, like, I don't know you. And I'm telling you this very personal thing about myself. And so, yeah, there's a part of me that wishes I would have known, but also I wouldn't be who I am today if I hadn't. But also, who would I be if I had? Like, how much further would I be if I had? I don't know. I just, like, it's a weird, I can't go back and change it. So it is what it is. But
yeah, because when you were talking about the missed career opportunities or the missed relationships or the missed anything, I just think of the butterfly effect and how cliche that is. But when you look at things in life, it really is true. If one of those things would have changed, how different would your life be? Or had you been in a space where you weren't at the time, how different would your life look? And to me, that's not always it doesn't mean it's going to be good or bad. It doesn't mean that it was going to be a good thing or a bad thing. It just, things would have been different.
I got really emotional thinking about like this realization that like what if I had experienced, you know, if I had figured it out earlier and I had had these other career opportunities, most likely I wouldn't be sitting here right now talking to you about this and sharing with the world my experience. And the thought popped into my head of like, and then the person that's listening to you right now that really needed to hear it and is probably going to reach out to a therapist right after this, listening to this episode, wouldn't have heard this from you right now and wouldn't be reaching out to a therapist right after this episode is over, or literally starting a Google search right now. And the idea that somebody out there listening to me right now is doing that is more powerful than if I had had a different career or relationships that turned out differently. I also love what I do. I love what I do as a mindset and communication coach. I struggle sometimes with imposter syndrome, but I love what I do. I love seeing the growth. I love hearing the feedback from the clients, and not just my clients, but their family members and their friends that say, wow, the way you're approaching this is so different than last year. You just seem so much lighter. Like, that is the biggest win for me. And words don't teach, experiences teach. So I wouldn't have been able to learn how to be a mindset coach had I not gone through the experiences that I had. I use my experiences to teach. So I have to remind myself regularly that I needed to experience struggle to get where I'm at right now. I don't know who I would be without that struggle. Do I want other people to struggle so that they can do something cool with it later? No, I don't think that you have to. I think that your life can turn out beautifully without struggle, without trauma. I don't think that you have to paddle upstream all the time and make it harder on yourself in order to succeed. I think that we can choose joy and we can choose happiness. That sounds really cliche and also toxically positive. But we can choose to do things for ourselves to feel better. We can choose to do things for ourselves to help ourselves. We don't have to go through the struggle.
And that's not telling yourself that you're okay when you're not. It's not saying that you shouldn't be this way. When we say that you can help yourself, we say go take a hot shower, call a friend, instead of scrolling on TikTok in your bed or not eating. Or I get it. I've been there. I know what it's like to feel so paralyzed that you don't even want to go make yourself a meal or wash your face or get dressed. Those are the things that we mean when we say help yourself. Take the 30 seconds to get dressed. Take 5 minutes to take a hot shower. It's not telling yourself that you're okay, not that, because I think that that is what can pop into people's minds when we say to choose joy. But by choosing a different action, you can leave the mental out of it. You know what? Shut your brain off and just go take a shower, right? Or I keep using shower as an example. Showers help me, which is why I keep bringing it up.
But do you need to take a shower? Is that like, have you showered yet today?
Well, I did work out earlier this morning and my hair is like nasty. So maybe I do. Maybe I'm telling myself something.
Right. I showed up on this call and I was like, Lila, it's a snow day. I'm a hot mess. Like, I did not do my makeup today. My hair is in a messy bun.
Yeah, I'm looking at both of us right now and I'm thinking shower. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right. Thanks. Well, I think this is a great point too to make. Like, you're at the bottom of the stairs. That's your baseline. If we say to you, just think positive, just tell yourself everything's great, that's like telling you to literally just take one giant step and get to the top of those stairs. Like, and unless you have go-go gadget legs, oh my gosh, I just aged myself so bad right there.
You did.
I did. That was great. I'm only 33, guys. I'm not that old. Well, maybe I am to some of you listening. Oh my gosh. Remember when you were little and 33 was like, she's a grandma.
I know. Yeah.
Anyway, we're not going to tell you if you're at the bottom of the stairs, like take one big step and you'll be at the top. Like, that's toxic positivity. That's not possible. Most likely you will fall and we don't want you to fall. So instead of taking one giant step and going to the top of the stairs, can you take one step up and work towards that baseline and then take one more step up? If you are at like two steps from the top, then you're at a better place to be like, okay, yes, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. I can see where this is going to feel good. Like, yeah, I want to get there. Your motivation, like your momentum is building at that point and you can get there. But you can't go from 0 to 100. You can't. And for someone to tell you to do that, that's toxic. So the mindset work that I do, the coaching that I do, the therapy that I have is not positive thinking. I tell every single client, we do not go from a negative limiting belief to a positive thought. We're not about positive affirmations in this program, because that's one extreme to another. This is something I learned from therapy. Thank you, Maria. You can't go from one extreme to another. That's not helpful for your brain. It's not going to connect. You got to get to something accurate, something neutral. So I don't coach positive thinking in mindset work. And actually, a really good analogy that Maria told me yesterday, which I loved, I'm going to share with all of you.
Let's bring her
on.
We
need to bring her on. She is great. She can teach us so many things about life. She was telling me about someone that was going through cancer treatment. And this person was told, like, the mindset work that they were told to do was, like, if you think the right way, you'll survive. But if you don't think the right way, you'll die. How harmful is that? How scary is that? How much fear on top of fear on top of fear is that?
Hearing you say that gave me a little pang of anxiety, and I am nowhere near this experience and what you're telling me. And that those words gave me a physical reaction. Ooh, yuck.
Let's not invalidate ourselves. Let's validate. Validate, validate, validate. Validate that you feel like crap. Okay, you feel like crap. It's okay. I mean, there's reasons that you feel like crap. Makes sense that you would feel like crap right now. We know that it's happening. Now we can choose to do something with it. But if we keep getting mad at ourselves for feeling like crap and think that we shouldn't be feeling like crap and judging ourselves for feeling like crap and having all the shame storm behind feeling like crap, what are you going to do? You're going to sit in that storm. There's no forward momentum from that. Yeah, it's okay to be where you're at. Living in the and. Let's live in the and. It's not one or the other. I'm at a low baseline this week. I'm feeling some sense of imposter syndrome. I'm feeling a little depressed, just down and out. Lots of different reasons. I can acknowledge what those reasons are. They're all very valid. And I'm still a good coach. I still love what I do. I'm still a good friend. All these things can be true.
Thank you. That was much better progress from me just telling people to take a shower.
No, that's so valid. It's true. Taking a shower can help you.
It is.
It's probably going to help both of us to take a shower.
My God.
I like that we have moments of, like, breaking the tension in this conversation already. Like, I think that's really important because it's a heavy topic. All right. Mental health does not equal positive thinking. Mindset work does not equal positive thinking. Positive thinking in an extreme is a delusion.
In Gen Z, we call it DeLulu. You know what, though? You need a little bit of DeLulu in your life. You need a little bit of hope, and that just because you don't see something right in front of you, or just because you don't think you have something yet, you can still believe and achieve and know that it's coming to you.
If you're going to say DeLulu is this very light, like, hope, like believing in what you can't see, fine. But when I'm talking, like, delusion, that's problematic. But being DeLulu and hopeful and excited and anticipating and believing in yourself, that's great. You have to do that.
Yes.
That's mindset work. That is definitely mindset work.
Yep.
The mindset work is a tool. It is used strategically to help you accomplish your goals. It's essentially a means to an end. What do I need to do right now? How do I need to think right now? I was on a call with a client the other day who struggles with anxiety quite a bit, and kind of breaking through this, like, overthinking, can't even, like, string words together sometimes because the anxiety is causing the brain to just, like, fire on all cylinders in an interview. And all we're doing is practicing. There's no pressure and we're struggling. And I said, all right, here's the mindset work for right now. For 10 minutes in that interview room, you are going to pretend like you've got it all together. You are going to tell yourself, I am the most articulate. I am standing here strong and knowing exactly who I am. That's, like, mindset work that's used for a very short period of time. This is not something that I'm going to tell you when you are in bed, can't get out of bed. It's 12:30 p.m. on a Tuesday and you, like, can't even pull the covers off and stand up. I'm not going to tell you, okay, you are going to think that you are the best, strongest, most powerful person in the world, and you're going to get up and rock it today. No, that's not helpful. That's harmful, because that person is not in that space. But the mindset work, you know, when we're in that space, but we've got to get something done, then it's like 10 minutes. Give me 10 minutes. Go do a power pose, drink some water, do some deep breathing, get yourself in a headspace for 10 minutes. And when you walk out of that room, we can go right back to where you were.
Stair-stepping. That to me is the biggest takeaway from this episode, really, is understanding A, the difference between mental health and mindset, and how mindset sustains your foundation when it comes to mental health. But also, it's not telling somebody to think positive, think fun, think joy. We talk a lot about chasing the joy in a lot of our episodes, but there is a time and place for that. So stair step, take half a step. Don't even do the full step.
Hang out on the step you're on if you need to for a bit. To that point, as we wrap up, I can't go back and change any of my experiences. I cannot go back and choose to do anything differently. I can move forward and be grateful for who I am now, despite and because of the things that I went through and because I chose to do things at a certain time moving forward. And the message is, you don't have to continue from here moving forward. You should not. Should is judgmental. I encourage you not to judge yourself and your decisions and the delay that you maybe have been putting off seeking help or talking to somebody. There's no judgment. There's no shame in that. But from here moving forward, we have choices. What do we do from here moving forward? That's the important thing. Not everything that we have done in the past, but you can choose to do something powerful for yourself moving forward. And the sooner you start, the sooner you'll start to feel better. I mean, you're not going to regret starting now when you look back 2 months from now, but you may look back 2 months from now if you hadn't started and wondered where you'd be if you had.
That's it.
And I'll wrap it up with that. Yeah. I would really love to hear what you guys think. Like, I would love to hear where you're at with things, or if you want to hear us elaborate on any particular topic. I mean, we've been, gosh, I don't even know what episode this is at this point. I think we're at least 10 episodes in. I don't know. Time is flying, guys. But I really want to know, what do you want to hear more of? What's speaking to you? What would you like us to elaborate on? What type of expert would you like to bring us to bring on the show and pick their brain about any of these topics? What would be most helpful for you? Because we're not sitting here talking just for the sake of talking for us. And I joked that this episode was for Lila, but that's not what this is. Lila and I have these conversations together all the time. We thought it was powerful to bring them to you. So please DM us. Let us know. Sash and Soul on Instagram. Let us know what you want to hear, because we want to provide what is useful, powerful for you.
We hope to be here for you. At my core, I became a journalist, not just to tell stories, but to be a voice, a trustworthy voice for people. And that applies here too. We want to be that trustworthy place that you can go. And that involves knowing what your needs are. So please DM us. I'd love to get some people, some conversations going. That'd be fun.
Absolutely. Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much for, I guess, allowing this safe space for me to disclose, you know, really personal stuff about myself. And also, please know that I've done a lot of work on myself to be able to disclose this. And you should always, always, always know that you don't have to share anything that you are personally going through. You need to protect yourself and keep yourself safe and disclose to those that are safe spaces for you. Find those spaces. Please take care of yourselves. We're truly grateful for you. And onward and upward. All right, everyone. We will talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Bye.
If you love what you're hearing on Sash and Soul and you're preparing for a pageant competition, you have to check out our free online training, 3 Keys to Winning the Crown. In this game-changing workshop, you'll discover the secrets to owning the interview and the stage with a winning mindset and humble confidence. This transformative session will empower you to cultivate a fearlessly authentic mindset and learn how to embrace your unique strengths, conquer limiting beliefs, and radiate confidence on and off the stage. You'll master the art of communication and discover powerful strategies to captivate judges and audiences with your unique voice and message. Click the link in the episode summary or visit fearlesslyauthenticcoach.com to claim your spot in this complimentary training. Your journey to greatness starts here.